This time by the Vincentric Memorial Chapel at 620 Washington Street, serving West Michigan for over 50 years. Your host, Doug Chapkus.
Thank you and good afternoon. I'm happy to have back with me again John Minskalvin. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Doug. Which one of these microphones is working? Am I talking to both of them? Is this stereo or what?
I think this one right
this
here.
This one works, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Have I got the right one there, Bob? Bob says we do.
John. Okay, we're in business. What do you want to talk about?
Well, we left off. I'm trying to remember where we left off.
We left off. Left off the last time we.
You were sliding down hills or something, weren't you?
Oh yeah, on Second Plank Road Hill.
And I was going to ask you something because we talked about those bobsleds.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you something more about sliding it. And I wish we were right in the middle, and it was getting funny there because you said how fast they'd go.
That's right.
And I wanted to ask you something more about that. Yet I don't even remember what that was anymore. That was mainly where they did that type of sliding.
That's right. They used to slide on Fifth Street Hill some, too. And, a young fellow was killed there by the Enterman. There weren't any automobiles to worry about in those days. You had to worry about the streetcar.
Well, how would they know? I mean, what about intersections downtown if you'd come flying down that
thing? Well, on the intersection downtown, they had a policeman. They had a man. A guard.
You mean he'd
stop the...
For the sled?
You bet your
Is
life.
Is that right?
Stop the Enterman. Of course, when they slid during the afternoon, and they didn't slide too much like afternoons, because afternoons you had to ice a hill.
Oh.
And right after school, all the kids that slid, run bobsleds, would go up there and ice a hill. And the city, as I told you, would let them use the fire hydrants, and then they'd get wash tubs. They didn't do it with a hose. They'd get wash tubs, big galvanized wash tubs, and they'd fill that wash tub with water and one kid on each side of it, and they'd run down that path. That path was only probably 2 feet wide. And they would run down that path and dump that water, and it would slide, the water would slide,
sure.
Would run down the hill.
Well, I bet it was hard to do, wasn't it, John?
Yes,
sounds like hard work.
Well,
it's
that was
you
work,
break
sure.
your neck.
It was work, but the kids had a lot of fun doing it. Of course, you had to wear overshoes or rubber boots or they'd get their feet
yeah.
wet. But they'd ice that hill all the way down to Washington Street.
What a job.
Well, sometimes those bobs would go down to Madison Street, and if it was just right and they had a good start, they'd slide, they could go down pretty near to the Grand, C&O Depot.
Is that
Marquette
right?
In those days. That was a long ride, and then they'd pull it back up. You asked how they got up the hill again.
Yeah.
And they'd pull them. And they had a long rope on it, and the kids that slid. If you slid down, you pulled up.
Well, now, did the track continue after they'd go through the intersection? Would the track resume again somehow, or from that point on, was it just straight? Or?
No, they had the same. They'd ice it.
Is that right?
Yeah, they'd ice it down there, sure. That was. Those were days, you want to remember, we're talking about entirely different times than we are today. Today, they take the snow off the hill, off the road.
Yeah.
In those days, they put it on. We didn't have any snow plows like they have today that would plow the road. Your sleighs, horse and sleigh would. That's all there was to it.
Mm-hmm.
You had some pretty good sleigh in that. They'd pack it down.
Oh, I suppose.
And with the horse, with the traffic.
Yeah.
Horse and sleigh.
Yeah.
Now, anybody that had a cutter, you know what a cutter is?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I rode in a cutter when I was a little boy.
Sure. Yeah. That has thin runners, but
yeah.
when you had a sleigh like the Vins and the farmers' sleighs had runners about 2 inches wide, and a team of horses and a cutter or a wagon, a sleigh over that would soon pack that snow down.
Mm-hmm.
You had pretty good sleighing.
John, what would they have to do with the horses? Wouldn't they have to put a special kind of horseshoe
they,
or something on them? You'd think
they'd
slip and fall.
What they called sharp shod. They had caulks on their shoes. The blacksmith would take those shoes and sharpen the toe and the heel caulks on them. And there were some kind of shoes that I don't think they got too very popular, but they were threaded. And then they had caulks that they could screw into the shoes, so when they got dull, they could take them off and put new ones in.
Is that right?
And once in a while, a horse would caulk himself and step on his own toe, you know, and draw
hurt
blood
himself,
out and hurt himself. But they were sharp shot, and a good many times a horse fall down, too.
Really?
Slide on that ice, yeah.
Well, kind of... Boy, that's a heavy thing to fall, isn't it? I mean, I bet they hurt themselves when they fall, don't they, or not?
Once in a while they did. Once in a while a horse break his leg falling down, too.
Wow.
But, there weren't too many of them. And, of course, it wasn't always icy now. Like this winter, I wasn't here during that time, but they had an ice storm.
Yeah.
And they used to have that, and, of course, that was...
Well, but that
was
terrible.
Good sleighing, but that wasn't very good on the horses.
I would
the horses
imagine
skated
that.
All over. The horse had all he could do to stand up. But all the delivery wagons, all the what are now trucks in town, that is local. There was you didn't choose a team of horses to haul stuff between here and Muskegon or anything like that. That was all by the interurban or the trains. But to all the factories and to all the stores, the goods were all delivered by team. The grocerymen bought their groceries from Grand Rapids wholesale houses mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Muskegon, too, I suppose there were some. And as I recall, there used to be one in Holland,
yes,
too.
There did. That's where my dad used to get his.
What was his name, Mueller?
Sure, Muller.
Muller, I remember that.
Sure,
yeah.
Ren Muller. That was the IGA outlet.
That's right.
Holland.
I guess that started. Started the IGA.
Yeah,
well,
my dad was an IGA grocer in Muskegon.
Did he run a grocery store?
Yeah, a little neighborhood store.
They would deliver. Of course, that would come by Pierre Marquette Railroad, road from Holland, or from Grand Rapids, Grand Trunk, or Interurban. And then the Interurban Depot was down back of what's Grand River Inn now, and they'd haul it from there to the store. There wasn't any door-to-door delivery it is now. They pick it up in Grand Rapids and deliver it to the store door here.
Well, now what would happen all winter, John, before they had cars? Did people come to stores, or would they phone in orders
they
and have them delivered?
They would phone in orders. And in a good many times when people, they didn't have telephones like they have today either, everybody.
Oh.
Then the groceries would go and pick up their orders. I can remember my father, you'd make two calls in a day on one house. You'd call there in the morning and get the order.
Is that right?
And then you'd deliver it.
And no additional charge for that?
No.
Goodness.
You know, that's why the grocery stores were all little.
Yeah.
They didn't sell stuff like they do today. And, of course, a pound of meat was a dime or something like that, instead of a dollar and something, a dollar and a half, or whatever it is today. But there just wasn't the money on it.
John, was there a lot of, I'm interested to know if there were a lot of door-to-door vendors of just one thing, like the colonial man used to bring bread.
Yes.
But was there a lot of that kind
of thing? Well, there were two or three tea companies.
Oh, I remember that.
Ooh. I remember there was a Jewel Tea
Jewel
Company.
Tea?
Now,
sure.
The Jewel Tea Company has quite a chain of stores in some cities.
Are they still in existence?
They did. Last time we used to go over to Glen Ellen, Illinois, they had the Jewel Tea Company. Real nice stores there. But they had a wagon, Jewel Tea Company. And then there was a fellow used to rent a horse from my grandfather. He would rent a horse and a wagon, a light delivery wagon. We called him Coffee Joe. I don't know what his name was. But all he sold was coffee.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Coffee and tea.
Well, could he make money just selling coffee
and
tea?
I don't know. He seemed to. He always paid for his horse. He was a nice old fella, too.
Well, was this fresh ground coffee, you mean, in a bag or what?
Yeah, in a bag. Yeah, it was always in a bag.
Did it have a brand name on it or something, or where did he get that coffee?
Yes, I presume it was. Well, he must have worked for some coffee importing people. I never knew much. I never knew him except Coffee Joe, and Coffee Joe would come every 2 weeks or something like that, and he'd go around and deliver the coffee and take orders that when he delivered it for the next trip.
Well, how did people know he was coming down the street? Did he yell or something?
No. He would take orders.
Oh.
And then he would deliver it. And he didn't have any sign on his wagon or anything else. They just knew Coffee Joe.
I can't figure that out.
I suppose that he'd go to Mrs. Smith over here, and she'd say, well, to Mrs. Jones next door, I buy my coffee of Coffee Joe. She'd say, no, why don't you try the coffee? That's good coffee, and so on and so forth. I don't know.
Was it cheap? Was it cheaper?
No, I don't think so. I
can't imagine why they wouldn't buy it right from the store.
I don't know.
Can you?
No, but Coffee Joe had a pretty good route.
He did, huh?
Yeah, he'd be here a day or two.
Coffee and tea.
Yep. And that's the way they peddled the coffee.
During the summer, did they ever have hucksters?
Oh, yeah.
There used to be one in Muskegon when I was a little boy, and you could hear him calling.
Sure,
he'd holler his wares, and they had the same guy every year.
This one fellow here used to say, coming around the corner with apples, tomatoes, potatoes. Apples out of sight, peaches nice and ripe, and crab apples too.
Is that right?
He had a regular sing-song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can still hear that guy when I was a little kid.
The farmers used to come and with a team, stop in front of the house, and the housewives would come from both sides of the street and buy vegetables. We had a fellow, I think his son still lives in town here, that used to have a vegetable road. And always fresh vegetables. That was pretty handy, too.
Yes, sure
it
was.
It was a good deal.
Sure was.
And I don't know whether he made a living or not, but I guess he did. He always ate. He had a pretty fair-sized family, and they had good produce. And I don't know whether he raised it. I don't think he did. He probably picked it up.
Would the Iceman deliver, too?
Yeah. Iceman delivered. They had a team of horses. Well, later were planks when they got trucks, but they used to deliver ice, cake of ice. Had an ice wagon, had an ice pick on the back of it.
Yeah.
Cut a 75 or 100 pound cake in two, and then the ice chips would fall out there, and the kids used to go and pick
up
the
chips. Yeah, we always used to run along behind
the
ice truck.
Yeah.
I don't remember it when it was horses, but...
Oh, yes, sure.
But then, did they do it in the winter, too, John? Did Iceman deliver in the winter, too, or did
No,
people,
in the winter, you set
to...
your stuff out on the back porch, or
Is that right?
had a window with a little box under a screen on one side of it. And I don't think they took icy around. Not very many
Didn't
people.
They?
A few people might have done it.
Yeah.
A lot of those people used to have their ice boxes built in so that you could fill it from the outside.
Oh.
And, of course, the Challenge Refrigerator Company made refrigerators.
Mm-hmm.
Ice boxes, not refrigerators, ice boxes. And if you can pick up one of those today, it's quite an antique, and it's quite a chest to have.
Oh, yes.
I don't know what for, just to say you own it, I guess. But they were made of oak and lined with zinc, and some of them opened from the top. You put the ice in the top. Some of them you put the ice in from the side. And then, of course, when electric refrigerators came in, well, that was the end of the refrigerator company.
Yep.
But that was quite an industry.
Well, and some of them were well made, weren't they, John? I mean, some of them you could put ice in. It really kept things cold,
well,
didn't it?
Yeah, these Challenge ice boxes were real good. They were shipped all over the country.
Is that right?
Then they began making them of porcelain.
Oh.
And that's how the Challenge Porcelain Company got started. When the Challenge Refrigerator Company went out of business, they were making some porcelain boxes, not many.
Mm-hmm.
They were just beginning, and they were beginning to use a few electric ones. They were beginning, but they couldn't compete with Gibson and the General Electric and all those.
I suppose.
But they did keep up. They had a good porcelain business. Their porcelain refrigerators were good porcelain.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Ringelbergs and Fosheim and Carl Kleist, I believe, were. Cornelia Boomgard worked down there, and Jim Orr, well, the key people there, started making porcelain for other people, and that's how the Challenge Porcelain Company got started.
Mm-hmm.
But You don't see many of those boxes around.
No.
But this wooden box, well, most of them were made of oak, the outside of it.
Yeah, well, they're nice looking, some of them, weren't they?
You go by the Challenge Refrigerator Company and you'd hear those planers going.
Is that right?
Saws running. That was quite a shop.
Yeah.
Quite an industry.
Yeah. Yep. Well, was there a colonial man here? Did the colonial man used to bring bread door to door?
Yes.
Blow a whistle?
I don't remember him having a whistle, but he used to bring bread here, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he came with a truck.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. See, the door, that was sort of toward the end of the door-to-door vendors,
yeah,
wasn't it, John?
That's right. You don't have much of that anymore.
And as the motorized stuff
that's
got
right.
on the road, why, that yeah. started tapering off,
yeah.
didn't it?
Then that started with the, I believe it was the A&P store was the first big store, and I remember they people always used to say that you got cheated there and you know, all this kind of stuff. And there was some guy by the name of Henderson, who was from South somewhere, and he used to get on the radio at night and tell you all about what lousy outfit the A&P store was.
Oh,
you know, Judas.
Really?
I wondered that they never put that fellow in jail or sued him. Of course, I never thought so. This was Henderson's idea.
Oh,
trying
I
to make
see.
Them, trying to make them believe they were. No, I don't think they the people around here ever thought that.
Mm-hmm.
A&P store had a pretty good reputation around here. They had
local
managers, and they were.
You were talking about that ground coffee that you ground yourself. Yeah. Well, A&P had a couple of famous brands.
Well,
didn't they?
Had
8 o'clock,
had,
and
they
then,
had yes, and that was good coffee. That was cheaper coffee than
sure
than most of them, but that was good coffee.
People
it used to be nice to go in the grocery store and smell that coffee.
Well, I used to love that.
Ground.
My
I remember
store
Garrett
too.
Eckens had a coffee mill. Here he had the store down here. He was the last one of the independent small grocers.
Mm-hmm.
And he pretty near starved to death, I guess, toward
yeah,
the end.
Yeah,
but he had a coffee mill there, and that was coffee. You could smell like coffee all over the store.
Yeah, those days are gone. I don't think anybody's going to do any more coffee grinding to speak of. Do you, John?
You had a lot of people bought coffee in bulk and then ground it as they used it because they thought that was fresher coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I remember some of them had a coffee mill on the wall, screwed to the wall, had a glass jar, and you put your coffee in that. You could see how much coffee you had left. And when you wanted to make coffee in the morning, you had to go and grind it first.
Well, of course, the whole concept of the store was so much different than
so
many things were in bulk.
That's right.
I mean,
crackers. You used to get National Biscuit Company crackers in a 25 or 35 pound box. I remember when I worked at the bakery, they always had a box of those crackers.
Well, I was thinking that the other day. We used to have all cookies in the bulk.
Sure.
And the girl doing the checkout would just reach in and get a handful and weigh them for people, and nobody ever complained about putting your hands.
No.
You'd have it on carrots just before that, and in other people's
get
groceries, you know.
Fill the kerosene can. And
then go stick your hand in the cookies, and weigh them up.
At the Grand Haven Baking Company, where I worked as a kid, they were famous for some of their cookies. One of them in particular was a vanilla wafer. They had two kinds of vanilla wafers. One of them was what they called a machine-cut vanilla wafer. That was a small one.
Mm-hmm.
It had a real vanilla flavor. They were, you can still buy a vanilla wafer.
Oh, yeah.
They call them Nilla wafers.
Yeah.
I suppose there isn't any vanilla in
I
it,
suppose.
So they daren't call it vanilla. I don't know. But these little cookies that they make at the bakery, you could take two or three of them at a time and have a mouthful of cookies. But those were real good cookies. That was a machine cut. They had a press there and had a belt on it, an endless belt of fabric, and that would you'd put a tray on there. And then somebody turned the handle and by hand, and it would cut these vanilla wafers, and you'd put them in the oven. Boy, when they came out of the oven at the bakery,
that was good.
Something. Then they made another one that was a vanilla wafer, and that was a darker cookie. And as I recall it, that had a scalloped edge and had sugar on the top.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we used to pack them in a square box, about a box about 14, 16 inches square, cubic.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a glass front in it. And you would put, I guess, three layers of cookies in there. And you used to pick them off the tray. I remember the top of your fingers would be raw or sore of scraping on that sugar.
Oh, boy.
But that was our job after school, packing cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when you broke them, you could eat them.
No.
We were never hungry in those days. You were never hungry.
You always saw that enough of them broke.
You know, you get home at night and... Well, they used to sell broken cookies to some people too. And there was nothing wrong with the broken cookies. If anybody had a family of kids and they weren't crumbled up or anything, but a cookie half and two, you probably didn't get the other half of it. Somebody else got the other half, but you had just as good a cookie as a whole cookie, and you ate them up anyway.
Sure. But, well, I remember the Johnson cookie fronts that we used to have in our store. You just removed the front off from the box.
Oh.
Then you'd replace the box. Then you'd keep the glass front. And then when one box would be empty, you'd throw it away and get out a new box and open it up.
I'm not sure, but I believe Brock still makes cookies. Of course, they used to make them.
Make cookies.
Yes, but not in the quantity that they did. They used to deliver those to the stores, and it wasn't a good store had homemade cookies, Brock's or Grand Haven Baking Company cookies on the shelf in these cans. These cans were a brass can. I suppose one of those would be an antique today too.
And
it had on the front of it Grand Haven Baking Company, and then a little window, and you could see what kind of cookies were in it, and that was all right.
But, you know, the whole concept was different than now. We used to have barrels of sauerkraut. I can remember when I was a little boy.
And barrels of pickles, too.
Cottage cheese.
I got one of those pickle barrels up in the upstairs in my garage yet that my
Is
dad
that right?
had in his butcher shop. An oak barrel. I suppose I've often thought I ought to get it down and put some water in it because it'd probably fall apart if I...
And we'd buy sugar and brown sugar in the bulk
sugar.
And dump it in a big bin in the back with a scoop on it, and then we'd
Well, a lot of them took the sugar right out of the barrel, and you weighed it up.
Yeah.
2 pounds of sugar. That's
yes,
what
sir.
People used to buy, 2 pounds of sugar. I think sugar sold for 6 cents a pound.
Did it?
Yeah.
Well, you used to have problems with mice in there once in a while, I remember, but nobody ever knew that because you'd scoop any problem out.
Well... I don't ever remember the mice getting in the sugar barrel very much. They had
problem with mice when everything was bulk like that.
That's right. Well, when I worked at the bakery at first as a kid, your bread was never wrapped up either.
Oh, really?
No. No, I remember when they first started wrapping bread. They used to pile the bread up on racks in the wagon. And it was just bread.
You drive along with open bread in the back of the wagon?
In the back of the wagon. Well, the wagon was closed. It was a van-type wagon.
But I see.
The bread would be open, And so sometime if you'd take a basket, yes, we had an open wagon. We'd have a basket of bread, but you'd put a paper over it then. If it was windy, the paper would blow off. But
wouldn't be any flies on that bread.
No. Flies couldn't stay on there. Well, I don't know. Well, I don't think there were any more people died of...
I wonder, with all the steps we take toward cleanliness today, but I don't, you never recall hearing that much of a
problem. Well, I'll say this much, that the bakery, as I worked in it, the bakery was clean.
Was it?
You bet your life it was clean. The cookie trays were washed, and I know they were washed because I had to wash some of them. But Lewis, my brother, worked. I didn't work so much in the back end of the bakery. Lewis did. My brother Lewis. But I did the delivering. I took care of the horses.
Well, it was hot in the back, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it was hot.
I hated
in the
to
back.
Go in there.
Yeah.
But John, now we had somebody call us a while back in the Problem Solvers while we were talking about delivery of things. There used to be a lot of dairies, didn't there?
Yes.
I mean, they have their own little route, or what?
Sure.
How come there's so many people delivering milk? I don't understand.
Well, there were four or five of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they milk their own cows and deliver their own milk.
Well, they'd have to do something with it first, wouldn't they?
Well,
yes.
Oh, yes.
They had a regular pasteurized process or something.
Yeah.
But no, those were all horse-drawn, too, weren't they?
Yeah.
All those carts?
At first, yeah. And then they began to get trucks. Then Miller came in with the Miller's Dairy, and then they began shipping the milk in there. And, of course, that eliminated a lot of milk, a lot of farmers. They delivered the milk to Miller, and he pasteurized it.
But now would somebody have a territory, like would somebody, I'm thinking like Ferrisburg and Spring Lake, would somebody serve pretty much one area like that?
No, that's the funny part of it. They used to deliver all over.
Did they really?
Yes. Yeah.
That's not that efficient then either, is it?
No, it wasn't. But people thought they were getting good milk, and used to say, well, so-and-so's milk was better than the other fellow's.
Yeah.
All came from cows. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Well, we're almost to the end of the program.
We
were going to talk about fires here. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left. We've been on delivery and all this kind of stuff the whole time.
Yeah, we started out sliding down Plank Road Hill, and here we are delivering milk.
Yeah.
Where'd we go? We've covered a lot of territory here today.
Well, what about the things like the fuel and stuff like that? Now, did that get delivered to, or what would they...
Fuel?
Yeah, now they used to, this is before, I'm talking about before the motorized vehicles. What did they use? Mostly coal?
Coal wagons. They had a coal wagon.
But horse-drawn coal wagons?
Yeah, and that Robbins had a coal business down at the end of Washington Street. And he had the most beautiful team of black horses you ever saw.
Were they naturally black, or was
black,
that from all the coal dust?
No, sir, they were beautiful black horses.
Were they?
Yes, sir. And they took care of them, and they had a teamster. Billy Vandermeiden was the teamster. And the teamster had to shovel coal in the wagon and shovel it out of the wagon. And he did a heck of a lot of shoveling there those days, you betcha. And, Van Zanten had coal, and Van Zylen had coal. June Schaefer used to deliver coal for...
Is that what everybody used for heat then, John?
Mostly coal or wood, yes.
Not any oil to speak of then?
No,
yet, huh?
There wasn't any. Nobody had an oil burner.
Is that right?
Yeah. I remember the first oil burners, my boss, Jim Oakes, got sick of shoveling coal in his house up on 2nd Street. And in Muskegon at the, I believe it was Muskegon Piston Ring Company, had invented an oil burner.
Mm.
And he was quite a finagler, and he was always looking for a deal. Which was all right. He went over there and he bought one of those. And he liked that thing so well that he got the agency for it.
Is that right?
And so he sold several of those oil burners to his friends around.
Oh, now what would that be, like a space heater?
Oh, no. This was a conversion. You put it in your furnace.
Oh.
Yeah, put it in your furnace.
Well, I bet that was quite a revolutionary thing.
That was quite a revolutionary thing. And, of course, they had to have a little service. And when the thing went haywire, I'd installed it with the help of one of the plumbers, but I did the electrical work on it. And it had a lot of gadgets on it.
Did it?
Switches and solenoids and all that kind of junk. And... he'd say, Johnny, can you go up and fix so-and-so's oil burner? And so I did that, too.
You got to be a serviceman for oil burners.
I got to be a serviceman for oil burners. That didn't last long.
What year was that, would you guess, John, when that first oil burner came here?
Well, it would have had to been in the early 20s, because I went to work for him in 22, so it would have had to been then.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, they came out with good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, modern.
The industry moved fast after that.
Yes, it moved very fast, you bet your life.
John, our time is all gone.
Well.
Now, we never even talked about those fires here. Well, you had a whole list of fires. And
we'll save that till some other time.
But
let's not talk about fires.
No, we'll talk about them sometime.
Okay.
But thank you for being here today.
Okay, my pleasure.
And we'll look for you next month, John.
Okay.
All right.
Lord willing, I'll sure be here.
Okay.
This is kind of fun talking about things like that.
Our guest on today's program has been John Van Skelvin.
This program is a presentation of Van Zantwick Memorial Chapel, 620 Washington Street, Grand Haven. serving West Michigan for over 50 years.